Believe It or Not. The Baker's Broadcast, presented by the makers of Fleischmann's Yeast on behalf of the 30,000 bakers in the United States and Canada, with Ozzie Nelson and his orchestra, a startling story of the island of Guam, three strong-armed women with the oddest jobs in New York, and the merchant of miracles, believe it or not, Robert Ripley. And now, Ozzie, let's go with the show.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We greet you with a musical testimonial to the original jam session, Boston Tea Party.
Or not, Robert Ripley.
Greetings, everybody.
Hello, Bob.
Hello, Ozzie. You know, for the past 6 months, newspaper headlines have stated that another world war is about to break out in Europe. But fortunately, nothing has happened yet. However, any little thing might start it. Wars have been fought for the most trivial causes. Whiskers, for instance.
Whiskers? A war started by a beard?
That's right. One day, Louis VII of France got mad at the Queen, and to spite her, he shaved off his whiskers. The Queen Eleanor was furious when she saw his weak chin revealed for the first time. He didn't look quite manly enough to suit her, so she divorced him and married King Henry II of England. This caused a war between England and France that lasted for 301 years, believe it or not. And there's the famous War of Jenkins' Ear. Captain Robert Jenkins was the commander of a British ship which was captured by a Spanish man-of-war under Captain Sandino. After looting the English ship, Sandino cut off Jenkins' ear and threw it in his face with an insulting remark about the King of England. This brought about the 7 Years' War, which eventually embroiled all the civilized world at the time.
Boy, whiskers and ears, what else?
Wars have been lost for ridiculous reasons, too. The war between Uruguay and Brazil was decided when the Brazilians ran out of ammunition and loaded their cannon with balls of cheese. And they fired a broadside at the Uruguayan Navy, and this strange bombardment was so alarming that the Uruguayans fled and lost the war of 1843. And stranger still is the Battle of the Herring. This ended the 100 Years' War between England and France. The English were losing until they found a wagon load of herring, which they proceeded to throw at the enemy. The French were so stunned by this fishy barrage that they took to their heels and gave up the field, ending the war.
So the English won by a herring.
The most comical end of a war was in 1894 when the Japanese beat the Koreans by a raindrop, you might say. You know, the Korean clothes are made of paper and they're glued together. And when it started to rain, the soldiers' uniforms just melted away and left them standing in their birthday suits.
And were their faces red?
Well, not as red as the face of the soldier who lost the war between Denmark and Scotland when he stepped on a thistle.
Stepped on a thistle? Ouch.
That's just what he said, Archie. He said ouch so loud that he woke up the Scottish army and saved Scotland. And from that day on, the thistle has been the national emblem of Scotland. But now I'd like to present a little radio sketch that happened during the Spanish-American War. It happened on June the 20th, 1898, when the governor of the little Spanish island of Guam was awakened from an afternoon siesta by the booming of a cannon. To his surprise and delight, he saw that an American battleship had entered the harbor. He hastily arouses his military aide.
Manuel! Yes, Excellency. You hear that, Manuel? They salute us. The great United States of America salutes little Guam. Think of it.
Excellency, I do think of it. And I ask myself why.
Why?
Why? Yes, why? Why does the great United States come to Guam in the middle of the afternoon and fire a gun? We shall never get back to sleep.
Is that the speech of a diplomat? No. Apologize.
I apologize, Excellency.
That's it. Besides, we can sleep tomorrow.
But these Americanos, they may salute all night.
If they do, it will be for the first time in history. And Guam will be famous.
We might both get decorations.
My mother would like that. Do you think they'd let me select my own medal?
You hear that? There goes another one. What shall we do now?
Do! Return the salute at once.
But we cannot. We used up all the powder last week.
All right, then use the fireworks. Bring up the fireworks, and just like true sons of Spain, we will salute the great United States.
But we used up all the fireworks, too.
Oh, what a miserable life I lead. How can I represent the King of Spain when I have no fireworks, no powder? I shall write to Madrid at once and complain. You hear that, Manuel? You see, there is no end to their courtesy.
They seem to have plenty of powder.
So shall we. You just wait till I write to Madrid. Wait till Madrid hears of it. Manuel, launch a boat. I myself will go out and greet the great ship and offer my respects in person. How do I look?
Most imposing, Excellency.
That is why I am Governor of Guam. The very instant I hear those guns, I run upstairs and put on my medal. Look, Guam is never unprepared.
Excellency, the salutes, how shall I say it? They seem to be coming closer.
Yes, I know. I noticed that myself.
Excellency, if we are going to pay our respects, I humbly suggest so that we do so at once. The last salute removed the roof.
Manuel, launch a boat.
Captain Glass. That rowboat is coming straight for us. What should we do?
Cease firing, Mr. Hollis, but keep every gun trained on the island. I'm afraid of treachery.
They're rowing like mad. What do you make of it, sir?
Man, the bow is their governor, judging by his uniform. I don't understand it.
They're probably coming to surrender, but you never can tell about these Latins. If you give the word, sir, I'll blow them out of the water with one shot.
No, wait. This calls for caution.
Ahoy!
Let me handle this. Come aboard, sir. Mr. Hallett, station a guard along the starboard rail and keep your eyes open. Come aboard, sir.
I clasp that arm.
It's getting me worse. I am out of breath.
But no matter. Gentlemen of the great United States of America, I am Don Juan Marina, governor of Guam. I would speak with your capitán.
I am Captain Glass.
Ah, senor capitán. I can only offer you my thanks and my deepest apologies.
Thanks and apologies? For what, sir?
Why, for not returning your salute, capitán.
Salute?
Yes.
You would not believe it, capitán. But on this wretched little island, we have not 1 ounce of gunpowder.
But never fear. I shall complain to Madrid.
News doesn't travel very quickly from Spain to Guam, does it, Governor?
Quickly? Will you believe it, Senor Capitan? I did not even know you were coming.
Governor, I'm afraid you don't...
No. Not another word. You and your men shall dine with me tonight.
Governor, I'm sorry we must decline your invitation. Those shots we fired were not salutes.
Not salute?
Sir, I regret to inform you, you are my prisoner. And incidentally, the United States of America is at war with Spain.
Manuel, you hear that?
Yes, Excellency. And I do not think Guam will like it.
That's exactly what happened. During the Spanish War, the battleship Charleston, on the way to the Philippines, captured the island of Guam without bloodshed, all because the governor mistook the American bombardment for a salute, believe it or not.
Bob, do I get a believe it or not about bread tonight?
Why, certainly, Ben. In fact, I have two believe it or not that will give you an idea of how valuable bread can be.
Right.
In Cripple Creek, Colorado, during the gold rush in 1892, gold was plentiful, but bread was scarce. A loaf of bread actually was sold for $118 in gold. Just one slice of that bread cost more than a dinner for a whole family today. And speaking of today, it's now possible to make bread in the chemical laboratory without using flour of any kind. This artificial bread, however, is so expensive to make that just one loaf costs $5,000.
Well, Bob, those cases show how lucky we are that bread is so plentiful and cheap today. Bread is really the backbone food of the country. More than any other food, bread gives us the sustained energy we need to carry on, to work hard or play hard hour after hour. When you eat plenty of toast for breakfast, you're not apt to get that low-down, weak feeling around 11 o'clock or at 4 in the afternoon if you've had plenty of bread for lunch. And when you've had bread for supper, you soon throw off your tiredness from working all day. You have pep and energy for social life in the evening. Scientific studies have proved that bread is very easily and completely digested and gives off a steady flow of energy. It makes you feel like working and being active. You don't have to drive yourself so much. So, if you want to feel peppy and get a lot done, eat plenty of bread. Have some with every meal you eat.
When did you leave heaven? How could they let you go? How's everything in heaven? I'd like to know. Why did you trade heaven for all these earthly things? Where did you hide your halo? Where did you lose your wings? Have they missed you? Can you get back in? If I kiss you, would it be a sin? I am only human, but you are so divine. When did you leave heaven, angel mine?
Believe it or not, Bob Ripley.
Okay,
thank
Bob.
Ben,
hello.
Say, Bob, what about those strong women that Ben told us of in the beginning of the program?
Well, Arthur, here they are. They are three ladies with the oddest jobs in the world. Let me introduce the first one right now, Mrs. Martha Drew Smith of New York City.
Good evening.
Good evening, Mrs. Smith. Will you tell the radio audience just what you do for a living?
I'm a blacksmith.
A female blacksmith?
What do you think?
You mean you actually hit anvils with hammers?
Well, I put a horseshoe in between.
Oh, you do.
For luck.
Well, tell me, how did you start this art of yours, Mrs. Smith?
My father was a smith.
A blacksmith?
Yes.
And you're Mrs. Smith?
Yes.
That means your husband is a smith, too.
Yes.
A blacksmith?
Right.
Have you no interests outside of blacksmiths and smiths, Mrs. Smith?
Well, horses.
would you recommend horseshoeing as a job for women, Mrs. Smith?
Only as a hobby, Mr. Ripley.
What do you mean?
My hobby's a horse.
You mean you're married to one?
No, I said my hobby.
Oh, by the way, how is the blacksmith business these days?
Not as hot as it used to be.
And why is that?
On account of the automobile. It's eating into the horse.
Oh, so you wouldn't raise your daughter to be a blacksmith, eh?
Not unless they put horseshoes on roasters.
Well, how does your husband feel about your work, Mrs. Smith?
Well, Mr. Ripley, you know how it is with professional people. There's lots of jealousy.
But you never have any real fights, do you?
No.
Well, how is that?
Well, I weigh 195 pounds, and my husband only weighs 160.
You weigh 195 pounds?
Only when I'm mad at my husband.
Only when you're mad at your husband? Well, how's that?
That's because I'm holding a sledgehammer.
Oh.
Well, how about giving us a little demonstration of your technique, Mrs. Smith?
All right.
Well, did you bring along your anvil?
Yes. Did you bring your music?
Yeah, sure.
Well, then let's go.
She really loves to swing. So listen, Ben.
Yes?
You don't happen to have a horse in the studio, do you?
Horse? Let me see. Yes, I think there's one back here.
Oh, I thought you'd bring him.
Here he is. Ready to be shot at sunset. This is the first time a real live horse has ever been entertained in a radio studio.
Now, wait a minute, Bob.
And the horse.
Now, wait a minute, Bob. You've shown us a lot of things, but you mean to say you're actually going to show us a horse being shoot on the stage here in the radio?
Yes. Actually, the Mrs. Smith is doing it right now. It's the first time a radio studio has been turned into a blacksmith shop. Mrs. Smith is shoeing a horse under the spreading microphone. Listen to that. She has the horse with the hoof, the nails, the hammer. Goes right at it. She takes the raft now. And another second. She's done it. Actually, shoe the horse. Smith, the old gray mare, believe it or not.
Boy, oh boy.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Smith. And now I would like to introduce a young lady who works for one of New York's leading nightclubs. She's the club's official bouncer, believe it or not. And here she is, Miss Lois DeFee of Taylor, Texas.
Good evening, Mr. Ripley, Mr. Nelson.
I understand you're a nightclub bouncer, Mr. Fay.
That's right.
How'd you start in this bouncing business?
Well, I began in Texas as a bouncing baby.
Boy, and I bet you were, too. How do you like your work?
Work? To me, it's play.
Well, how many people do you bounce out every night?
Oh, about one or two on weeknights and four or five on Saturday night.
Do you like the job?
I just can't wait for Saturday night.
Well, I must say you've got the build for it. How tall are you?
6'2".
And what do you weigh?
I tip the beam at 185.
Well, that's not tipping it. That's knocking it right over.
Hey, who gives you the most trouble, Mr. C?
The little guys.
Oh, the little guys.
Yeah, I can spot the big ones, but the little ones are hard to find. They duck under my arms.
When is your busiest season?
Right now, the football season. At this time of year, all these college boys think they're tough.
And which college do you find the hardest to handle?
I'd call it a tie between Harvard and Yale.
What about Princeton?
Oh, the dean doesn't allow them to drink anymore.
Well, what about Rutgers?
What are Rutgers?
Oh, I just went to school at them.
Tell me, what are the chances for advancement in your profession?
Well, I hope to work in the Rainbow Room.
You mean the Rainbow Room on top of Radio City?
Yes, so I can bounce them 65 stories.
Well, suppose you give us a little demonstration.
Certainly, I'll bounce Elsie off the stage.
Wait. Pick up Elsie, threw it right on the stage. Come on back here, Elsie. Well, if you think Miss DeFee is tough, there's another lady here who is tougher than Miss DeFee.
Tougher than Tiny. Who's she, Bob?
Believe it or not, Ozzy, and she's a grandmother.
A grandmother?
This grandmother is a professional boxer, and here she is, wife of the famous Billy Goat Mandy, who has appeared on this program, Mrs. Anna Mandy.
Hello, Mr. Ripley. Hello, Mr. Nelson.
Hello, Grandma. How long have you been a professional boxer?
Oh, about 30 years.
How do you keep in trim?
I use my husband as a sparring partner.
Oh, he's a boxer, too, hey?
Oh, he thought he was.
Was your mother a boxer?
Say, let's cut all this talk out. If you want to know how tough I am, let me take on them two phonies you just had out here.
All right. Let's have a little contest, then.
Do you think it's safe, Bob?
Oh, trust me, Ozzy. Now, Mr. Fee, what tests of strength can you perform?
See that anvil?
Yeah.
Yes.
Watch me lift it.
Go right ahead.
Oh, boy.
Mr. Fee actually lifted the 200-pound anvil 3 feet off the floor. Mrs. Smith, do you think you can do that?
It's child's play.
No, she does the same thing. Now, Grandma Mandy, do you think you can lift that anvil?
Lift the anvil? Well, I'll lift the horse.
Believe it or not, Grandma Mandy is serious. She's climbing up on the platform. The horse is brought in and is underneath. She's now fastening a strap around her body. She takes a deep breath. The horse takes one, too. She's having a big night. She's got him. Up he goes, 6 inches off the stage. Grandma Mandy wins. She lifted the horse leg nearly 400 pounds. Believe it or not. And if any of you thought that women were the weaker sex and that the Amazon was only a river, well, tonight's performance ought to change your mind. Believe it or not.
Thank you.
started years ago, long before the radio. Now it's all dressed up and so, everybody calls it swing. Back in 1903, ragtime was the novelty, but it's been modernized, I see. Everybody calls it swing. Rhythm never changes much, it stays about the same, though swing deserves its fame. It's the same old jazz with a brand new name. If you hear somebody shout, swing it, brother, swing it out. It's rhythm that they're talking about. Everybody calls it swing.
The young people will often run off without finishing their supper. Well, here's a dessert that keeps them right to the end. For example, listen to this young lady on the telephone.
Oh, Dick, I'd love to go, but I can't leave just this minute. Well, no, I've got to finish my supper. Well, I haven't had my dessert yet. Oh, you don't understand. I want my dessert. I like it. Well, if you must know, it's bread and butter pudding. Yes, I said bread pudding. Well, I guess you never had any like my mother makes. That's the trouble with you. Well, sure, it's delicious. It's about my favorite dessert.
There you are. When it's made right, bread pudding is as delicious a dessert as you can serve. Everyone likes it when it's made soft and custardy. And it's just as easy as not to make it this way. You simply spread bread generously with butter, and then you add sugar, eggs, and milk, and bake in a slow oven. You get a bread and butter pudding that's deliciously soft and custardy. Or you'll find some people even asking for second helpings of it. And remember this. You'll find a delightful thing to do that adds variety to your bread puddings is to flavor them in different ways. Sometimes you can put in raisins. And other times, flavor with butterscotch. Then there's coconut, chocolate, and different kinds of jellies and preserves can all be added to bread pudding to give them distinctive and different flavors. Then you'll find that your family will be glad to get this economical and healthful dessert quite often. And try one of the coconut layer cakes that bakers all over the country are featuring this month. You'll agree that both the cake part and the coconut icing are delicious. Get one of those coconut layer cakes this very week.
And in conclusion, I would like to extend congratulations to Ozzie and Harriet on the birth of their son, born yesterday. And I can think of nothing more beautiful than to repeat that famous Oriental prayer that I've heard so often in the Far East. I heard it on my recent trip. May your son be like the fragrance of incense, like a garden of golden bloom, and may he always walk on golden stairs. Believe it or not.
This is the same time we bid you good night. Your announcer is Ben Grauer. This is the National Broadcasting Company.